The Small Business Administration is reopening the comment period for a rule proposed late last year. The SBA is trying to bring small business contracting rules in line with what was mandated by the 2013 Defense Authorization Act. But critics say the SBA's approach is unfair to small businesses. Many of them would qualify as large ones, while several large businesses could qualify as small ones. Tim Sullivan is a partner at the law firm Thompson Coburn and a longtime procurement attorney. He joins me now with his take. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so let me just read one paragraph from the announcement here in the Federal Register of earlier this month. SBA is reopening the comment period. Given the scope of the proposed rule and the nature of the issues raised by the comments received to date, SBA believes that affected businesses need more time to review the proposal and fully prepare their comments. In other words, we got so much thrown at us, we can't even deal with it, is what I'm reading between the lines here.
Well, that's true. They shouldn't have been surprised. This proposed rule, which can, and let's make sure we understand, this is a proposed rule. This is the rulemaking process, so nothing's happened yet. And it's happened many times over the course of my career that proposed rules come out in one form, and sometimes they die, and sometimes they are finalized in very different form. But in this particular case, they have covered, here's what happened. With the National Defense Authorization Act of 2013, SBA was mandated to do certain things with respect to small business performance requirements on these set-aside contracts. And apparently, when the SBA folks started to think about this, they decided that, well, as long as we're doing these things, let's do some others. So they covered a variety of issues in this proposed rulemaking process. It's, as you know, it's probably 7 or 8 pages long, single space, 3 columns on each page. And when you cover all those issues, a lot of people's oxes are going to be gored. So that is what happened. I mean, my gosh, there are a number of things in here, and they got some very thoughtful comments. I think they're at about 180 comments right now, and they've got a lot of thinking to do. Now, many of the comments are along the lines of, let's just do this. This is a great thing. But there are some very thoughtful comments in there. They're all on the record, of course. It's a very transparent process. Very thoughtful comments saying, wait a second. We don't have a problem with you doing what you have to do here, but we think you have to provide more clarification and more guidance on a number of the things that are raised by these new rules. And Tom, if you've had a look at them, I have to say that overall, what they do is add an incredible amount of compliance burdens for both prime contractors and contracting officers. And it's almost like we've forgotten that we're just out here to buy some software or hardware or get a construction job done, and we spend all of our time down in the weeds trying to make sure whether someone is complying with Section 125.DH2133. And that's a problem in this business.
All right. So let's go back to the 2013 Defense Authorization Bill. What was it trying to do here?
Well, I think with respect to what appears to be the big issue here is it was trying to make sure that SBA would do something to stop abuses where, on the one hand, it looked like agencies were setting aside contracts for small business exclusively for small businesses or the various categories within the small business sector, 8A, women-owned, veteran, disabled-owned. And ultimately finding out that the contracts are being performed by the big guys. And those abuses did happen, and so they're trying to tighten that up. And they've reworded things so that the focus is now going to be on the amount of money that the prime contractor subcontracts. So for example, if something is a small business set-aside, and let's say that the NAICS code, the small business size standard for that particular North American industrial classification code is 500 employees, and the procurement is restricted to competition among companies that qualify under that NAICS code, 500 employees. So if a company comes in, let's say they are a legitimate small business and they have a NAICS code of 300, they have a size standard or a number of employees of 300 people, they can subcontract up to 50% of the amount they are paid by the U.S. government to other companies, even large businesses, excluding the cost of materials. Now, you can see math gets a little tricky here.
In other words, they don't want fronting for...
They don't want fronting.
...by the small companies on behalf of the big, say, systems integrators.
They don't want fronting. And in fact, they've taken one additional step, which I think is the one that has people confused and scratching their heads. They've come up with a concept called similarly situated entities. And so what that means is that in the course of my subcontracting, if I subcontract, let's say this is a small business set-aside again, if I subcontract to a company that is also a small business under this NAICS code, that is not covered by my subcontracting limitations. They are exempt from it. Now, if it's an 8A contract, prime contract, and I subcontract to another 8A company that meets the size standard for this procurement, that's not covered. So I can do a lot of subcontracting that doesn't come within this limitation. But SBA thinks that's a good thing because these are small businesses, and I can't argue with that. Now, the regulations as they're set up really don't do much to enforce what happens when the prime contractor submits, awards a subcontract to a subcontractor, even if it's similarly situated. There's nothing to enforce what happens or monitor what happens when that sub in turn subcontracts out, and people are worried that it could end up in the hands of a big business there.
And Tim, let me ask you this, too. By the way, we're speaking with Tim Sullivan. He's a partner at the law firm Thompson Coburn. Don't these rules also incorporate a way for a lot of small businesses to band together and form partnerships
and yet
still remain classified as small?
Well, that's right. It takes the concept, well, not partnerships. We try to be very careful to make sure people...
I knew that wasn't the right word when I said it.
Between a joint venture and a partnership.
Joint venture.
Up until this proposed rule, and of course the old rule is still in effect. Let's use the procurement where we have a small business size standard of 500 employees. If Company A is in fact a small business, let's say with 250 employees, and Company B has 300 employees, if they were to joint venture under the existing rules, the joint venture would be knocked out because it's over the small business size standard, because the case law and the regulations have shown that joint ventures are considered to be affiliates. Joint venturers are considered to be affiliates of each other. Now, the way they're doing it, they are not going to do that. If two small businesses get together and they're both individually under the size standard for that particular procurement, even if together they'd be over 500, they're exempt and they're allowed to joint venture. Now, that's going to cause some heartburn because, as you know, the pie is only so large out there with respect to who gets government contracts. And now the company, let's say I'm a company with 600 employees. Along comes this small business set-aside. I can't bid it, but I see that it's going to a joint venture, which together has, let's say, 700 employees. That's going to gall me. So that's why you get attention in things like this.
You know, when you think of some of the big platforms, which are basically assemblies of large numbers of parts made by dozens, maybe hundreds of small companies, you could almost envision where, like for the new bomber or something, you know, the 500 little suppliers could get together and they would be the small businesses and they could subcontract the assembly to Boeing. I'm making that up, but, you know, if there's a way to do something, somebody will think of it.
That's what happens. There's going to be a lot of uncertainty. If this rule gets passed, and in whatever form it gets implemented in months from now and maybe a year from now, the next thing you know, it's going to be a period of uncertainty in the business. The contracting agencies are going to have to go through training. SBA is going to have to start dealing with challenges, and we are several years away from knowing how it's all going to shake out. You're exactly right. However, in the example you just gave, that's going to be a prime contract that's awarded to a Boeing or a Lockheed, and these things all sort themselves out at subcontracting level. These problems addressed, the situations addressed by this regulation, really go to small business set-asides, and that's where Boeing couldn't compete in the first place. However, a Boeing or a Lockheed could get up to 50% of the work the way it under the current rules, and now they're changing that a little bit as well.
All right, so these rules had originally closed in February, and now they're open for some months longer, I guess.
Well, I mean, today's April 3rd, and the rule comment period closes Monday.
Oh, that's right, April 6th.
April 6th.
So they gave it another month or so, basically.
Right. not to say that they wouldn't extend it again. We've seen that. The rulemaking process is a very deliberate process, and there are a lot of issues here. I mean, it is amazing if you read this thing, there are probably 12 to 15 things going on here, and there's a lot of moving parts, and this is what's wonderful about the rulemaking process, because you got folks at SBA who may never have worked in the business and may never have run a company or been a CFO at a company. They don't spot the same things business people do, and the comments have come in. There are comments from the American Bar Association public contract section, which says, wait a second, you've got these rules in here, they're difficult to understand, and yet the failure to comply with the rules could result in debarment. You've gone too far. There are very stiff penalties, Tom, if you violate some of these rules, a $500,000 penalty
Debarment.
Or debarment, or the amount you've actually over subcontracted, if that's greater than $500,000. So they really whack you in these things, and the message is, we want you folks to toe the line here and do this correctly. But boy, I'll tell you, the sanctions are onerous. And the in fact, there's language in this proposed regulation that basically says to prime contractors, you have to have all your subcontractors lined up by name and the type of work they're going to do and the amount of work they're going to do with written contracts before you submit a proposal.
Oh boy, so yeah, a lot of minefields here. I guess a lot of mines in the field.
That is crazy.
All right, well, I wish we had time to go through it rule by rule, but we don't. Tim Sullivan is partner at the law firm Thompson Coburn. As always, Tim, great to have you on.
Tom, thank you very much.